some other things that we may have taken out loans for. So today we're going to speak about debt because there are moral implications of debt, and we're going to explore the Greek crisis, and then we'll talk a little bit more on the global repercussions and the ethics of debt. So today it might seem like a little bit esoteric, but if you ever looked at your credit card balance and realized that you owe a lot of money on that, it's probably something that is worth listening to and hearing about. It's complex, but one of the things I can kind of promise you, I'm going to ask questions that are probably on your mind because I don't understand it all. So I'm going to ask those questions, which may seem simple to our experts, but hopefully it will give us an insight into what's going on there. You know, interestingly, the Greek debt crisis was something that I thought was really interesting to me for the simple fact that it just came to be that two people who I knew actually left for Greece to go on vacation in Greece, one on a honeymoon, one on a vacation, just as the Greek debt crisis was blossoming. And so it was kind of one of those things that was very interesting to kind of realize that people who I knew were going there. And I did speak with one of those individuals when she came back, and she did talk about how it was very, very interesting because you weren't sure whether you could get money out of the bank, whether they would accept your credit cards. And it was really something that came down really on the ground to see how people were affected by the debt crisis. You know, tragically, we continue in our country to deal with deaths by those who engage in acts which are incomprehensible. So there were four Marines that were shot last Thursday, and a fifth service member died from sustained injuries last week, and that's just another tragic situation. It was the person who perpetrated it was killed on the scene, and they're being investigated as an act of domestic terrorism, and it's something that, you know, unfortunately, it's become what we have to live with, and it's one of those things which, you know, in some of our founding documents, we talk about kind of securing international or securing order and protecting the domestic home front. And we have now the Office of Homeland Security. And when these things happen, they just are so kind of riveting, even though, you know, we're now almost 15 years after the tragic terrorist attack of September 11th at the World Trade Center and also on the Pentagon in Washington, D.C. And in a certain sense, I know it's a different world, but the United States has oftentimes felt a little bit isolated and protected because we sit, you know, with two big oceans on either side of us. And so a lot of times wars and those actions which do impact people in other parts of the country, we've been preserved safe from. And there's a part of our history which, you know, even going back to President George Washington, which advocated not getting involved in foreign entanglements. And so when these things happen, and, you know, now we're 15 years after September 11th, when thousands of people died in a single attack, things still happen. And we kind of say, ooh, they're wrenching to us when they do happen. And, you know, they make us realize that the world we live in is not always a calm. It's not always a peaceful place. So it's one of those things that, you know, we always keep those involved, especially the families of victims and the victims themselves, in our prayers. And, you know, we kind of examine ourselves. What do we need to do to protect ourselves? What do we need to do on a deeper level that we always try to speak about here on Just Love, is what do we need to do to create an atmosphere in our world that those type of acts of terrorism don't happen? And that's not an easy thing to do. It's, you know, and whenever you talk about those issues, people kind of say, well, you know, it's the individual. And then people say there's the environment. And I think our perspective is that, wait a minute, you can't eliminate anything. An individual does have responsibility for their own acts. And yes, we as a society have the responsibility to provide an atmosphere in which those things do not happen. And so it's not a question of either or, it's a question of trying to deal with both the personal and the communal to make our world more just and to make it more loving of God, of self, and of neighbor. So as we kind of move now to talking about the debt crisis in Greece, let's go to our first guest, who is David Kamerman, who is a professor of political science and the director of EU studies at Yale University. Professor Kamerman, thank you so much for joining us on Just Love.
Thank you for having me on your program.
Great. So give our listeners a little sense of your own background and how you got to be in this kind of august position of a professor at Yale University. How'd you get to where you are today?
By living a long, good life. I started after college. I went to business school. I worked briefly in business. I then decided to go into political science and went to Michigan, where I did my PhD, and came to Yale in 1975. So I've been here 40 years.
Uh-uh. And so you've been around there for a while.
Been around for a while. I teach about European politics and the European Union, it's a very interesting continent and region with many crises and many interesting developments occurring for someone who studies politics.
So tell me, Professor Kamerman, should the Greeks get out or should they stay in? What do you think?
I think they didn't get a good deal last week, that's for sure. But I think Grexit, as it's called, the Greek exit, would be very difficult. In principle, it sounds like a great idea that they would get out, have control over their economy, have more sovereignty, have more control over economic policy by their parliament, so forth. But the problem is getting from here to there, because I think with the Grexit, with the Greek exit, the economy would probably collapse. The unemployment rate that's already well over 20%, 25%, and almost 50% for young Greeks would increase. There would be bankruptcies. The banks would close. There wouldn't be international financial assistance available. The idea of a Greek exit, which the German finance minister put on the table at the extraordinary 17-hour meeting the weekend before last, the Greek exit would be great if Greece could get through the transition of going from the euro to its own currency, but I think it would be very difficult. So I think the deal that we now have on the table is not a great deal for Greece. It's actually not a great deal for the Europeans either, but I think it's better than the alternative.
It's interesting, Professor Kamerman. I was listening to a conversation yesterday by somebody who was pretty knowledgeable about the Iran negotiation and the Iran nuclear deal. And he almost used exactly the same words, that it's not a great deal, it's not a great deal, but, you know, is there a better deal that could be had? I mean, it certainly seems to me in the world that we live in, I think, you know, I don't even have to know what the crisis is, and I don't even have to know what the negotiation is. I'm pretty sure I could say that about 90% of the deals that are negotiated in the world.
I think that's probably true, and that's part of doing a deal, that it means that both sides have to give up something. And for the Greeks, it means they have to accept another round of austerity. and they've already gone through 5 years of austerity through the two previous bailouts. Austerity meaning they have to cut spending, increase taxes, and doing that, which has the benefit of reducing the budget deficit, of course, has the great disadvantage of causing a contraction in the economy, meaning the growth rate will, which is negligible now, will get worse, the unemployment rate will increase, and so forth. And of course, what makes all of this really complicated politically for Greece is that we have a government, Syriza, which is the coalition of the radical left, that won the election in January, now in office, headed by Alexis Tsipras. And they campaigned on a program of ending the austerity and getting debt relief. Greece now owes well over 300 billion euros to the EU and the European Central Bank, and owes money as well to the IMF. So it's a very complicated situation for Greece, because, and the Greek government now, because having run on a program of ending austerity, getting debt relief, they got none of the above, and they are now in a situation where they have to accept this package that's a very tough set of conditions, and live with it. And that's, it's going to be very difficult.
You know, Professor Cameron, I have to say I took a little bit of probably undue glee in watching the quote-unquote cradle of democracy go through the political nonsense that I think is going on in this country. I mean, basically, those guys ran on a platform that they were incapable of implementing, and everybody bought it. They voted for them. They got them elected. And then they acted like teenagers, went to the EU and said, well, we're good doing this. And the EU played hardball and said, oh, yeah, fine.
Well, that's right. And I mean, what makes this an interesting, complicated situation is that it was quite clear that at the end of the day, the EU would agree to another bailout and would agree to extend them more money because, as I said, the Greek government owes the EU well over 300 billion, and if they were to leave, if they were to actually leave the eurozone, walk away from the euro, they would probably, in all likelihood, walk away from that 300 billion that they owe the Europeans. So, in a perverse sense, the Greeks had the Europeans right where they wanted them.
I mean, it's exactly, isn't it the same thing they say? You know, if you owe $1,000 to the bank, you got a problem. You owe the bank $10 million, the bank's got a problem.
Right, right. That was the situation. So, for both sides, it's a difficult deal because the Europeans now have committed another, or they will commit once the Greek government goes through a couple of legislative moves. They will commit another $86 billion, which will mean that Greece will have one of the highest debt-to-GDP ratios of any country in the world, well over 200%, will owe the Europeans and the European Central Bank almost $400 billion. So from the European point of view, that's problematic. And I think everyone in the world, under even the Europeans, I think now understand that debt isn't sustainable and that they will have to give some form of debt relief at some point. So it's not a great deal for the Europeans because they're in a situation where they're now in bailout number three and there's no evidence that the Greek economy will turn around. For the Greeks, it's more of the same, meaning more austerity and more hard times and more poverty and more unemployment. So it is sort of a bad deal, and perhaps the only deal that could be made was a bad deal for both sides, but that's what we got.
We're speaking with Professor David Cameron, who is the professor of political science and the director of the European Union studies at Yale University, and we're speaking about what just is going on with Greece. And you know, Professor Cameron, this economic stuff, this international economic stuff, confuses me because it always seems to me you go left to go right, you go right to go left. Good is bad, and bad is good. So, like, let me give you one simple example. Whenever they tell me that the dollar is weak, I kind of think that's a bad thing. But then they tell me when the dollar is weak, it helps trade because other countries can buy goods.
Right.
When the dollar is strong, which I would think that'd be good to have as something strong, a strong currency, but then it's bad because how do we figure out all this stuff? And when you do the austerity stuff and you cut pensions, there's less money going into the economy and therefore taxes go down and you can't. So how does a poor guy like me who doesn't understand this stuff, like you Yale professors, how do we figure out kind of what all this stuff means? Is good bad or bad good or good? What is it?
Well, it is confusing because I think one of the problems we have is that there is a conventional orthodoxy or macroeconomic orthodoxy that budget deficits are bad, and that the way you get rid of budget deficits is you cut spending and you increase taxes. And the problem is, if you do that for a country that is in the middle of a depression, it's just going to make the depression worse.
Right.
So I and a number of others have been arguing for a long time that austerity is really a trap that only leads to more austerity and more economic contraction, and that I think the EU is gradually beginning to figure this out, but they really haven't. They really are in this mindset where they think that they have to deal with the budget deficit rather than figuring out how do you promote growth, how do you promote employment. I mean, what we need, for example, right now in Europe is a European-wide employment policy that would provide funds to generate jobs and growth in Southern Europe, not just Greece, but also in Italy, Spain, Portugal, all of which have relatively high rates of unemployment. So, yeah, there is sort of a notion here that somehow you get your finances in order and you do your reforms, raising the retirement age, weakening the labor unions, and all good things will happen. But I think that's an illusion, and I think there's no prospect ahead, as far as I can see, that Greece will ever get to a point where it has sustained high levels of growth. And it's now been in a depression longer than the U.S. was in a depression in the 1930s. And it's been very painful for people, I mean, in terms of poverty, in terms of family life, so part of it is this conventional wisdom and also the commitments that the EU made when they designed economic and monetary union, which focused on removing budget deficits. So, in a sense, they didn't read enough Keynes, I guess.
Well, listen, Professor Cameron, you've been more than generous in giving time, and I know I learned a lot. I hope that our listeners learned a lot. It is a complex topic, but it is something that we can kind of glean a little bit more about. And, you know, I think you gave us a little bit of a pathway to understand when we read things in the media, we look at blogs, we look at newspapers, radio interviews, we learn a little bit more about it. So, hey, Professor Cameron, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us on Just Love.
Well, you're welcome. I enjoyed it.
Great. Professor David Cameron, the professor of politics and science, the director of European Union Studies at Yale University. And we dealt with a very complex topic of the debt in Greece, the European Union, and the deal that was just cut which involves more debt and involves hopefully a long-term approach in which hopefully there can be a path out of the current situation, crisis, and austerity that is there in Greece. We're going to take a break and we'll come back to Just Love, Just Do It. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself. And if we do that, our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate also. This is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome back. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. Just do it. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. This week, we're speaking about one of those arcane, esoteric, strange, weird topics, international debt. And we spoke about the debt in Greece, and a little bit later on, we're going to speak with somebody who's going to talk to us a little bit about the ethics of debt. And I thought it was just about money, but there's an ethical quality to debt. We're going to speak with Professor Wright, who is a professor of economics at the University of Richmond, and we'll explore again the topic of debt and ethics as it has to do with that. You know, I have heard somebody say, and I think is something to it, is that finance, budgeting, debt, those issues are an incredibly important moral topic because they do have a lot of implications on people's daily lives, whether they have the necessities in which they can do, which they can live their lives in dignity. So I'm looking forward to speaking with Professor Jonathan Wright in just a few minutes. Tom Dobbins, who usually is here with us, is not here today. I think Victoria sent him on a journey out to the West. He's at a conference of social action directors in, I think, the northwest of the country. And actually, I'll tell you a little bit about that, because about every year, there are those people who work in dioceses throughout the country whose job is to make sure that the message, basically the message of this show, Just Love, that there's justice, there's compassion, that are part of the church's mission. And their job in each diocese is to make sure that that message is part of the way that programs are done and services are delivered and the way that parishes kind of tie into that. So we have in the studio with us today, in addition to Victoria, we have Paul Castiglio, who works with us at Catholic Charities. And Paul, are there any news that you want to share with our listeners?
Sure, I'd be happy to. dovetailing on our previous guest, there is a report that banks have now reopened four basic services in Greece after 3 weeks of not being able to do that. And there's still lots of restrictions on how people can interact with their banks, but they are allowed to now. They had been only allowed to take out 60 euro a day, but now they can take out a cumulative 420 euro. Not just for the week, but they could do that all in one chunk if they wanted to. So, you know, there's, to your point of budgeting, there's some budgeting that certainly has to go on by folks in Greece there as they look to get money from their banks and move forward with their lives.
Hey, Victoria, here's a question for you. Do you know what the Greek currency was before it became the euro?
I have no idea.
No idea?
No.
A drachma.
A drachma? I've never heard of that.
See that? You learn something. Every day. So
yes.
A drachma, Greek drachmas. So they go back a long time. I mean, Greek goes back a long time.
Yeah, of course.
Old country. So yeah. It's a drachma. Euros, but drachma.
I've never been, so I don't know that much about it.
Go. You should go. You'd like it.
I'm sure. I enjoy traveling.
Yeah, you'd like it. Nice place. Nice place to go. Wait till the banks are open. But Porto, the banks are open. Don't spend more than 420 euros a week and you're fine.
Right, right.
Okay, good. Paul, what else we got?
Well, I know you've touched on Pope Francis's encyclical over past weeks. This past week, he honed in on a specific area of environmental concern in talking about the mining industry and how, you know, there's so many people who are affected by the consequences of mining and how there's calling on leaders connected to that industry to be more socially responsible and to avoid some of the things that that happen with poor mining practices around the world.
Hey, and he also threw a shindig or a meeting in Rome this past week, didn't he?
He did, I believe, attended by our mayor of New York and some other folks from around the world as well.
Yeah, I heard there were 50 mayors. So you guys listening to Just Love throughout the country, check if your mayor got to go over and hang with the Pope and talk about climate control and stuff like that. I saw a bunch of them there. I couldn't recognize any of them except our mayor is literally head and shoulders above most other mayors. So
very true.
So you could see him in the pictures and... But there were mayors from there. I think the governor of California was there.
Jerry Brown was there too.
So, it was a meeting on his encyclical on climate control on the environmental issues. So it was, I wasn't there, so I don't know what happened. But glad they were talking about it. Important topic.
And I hope the mayor said, see you in a couple months when he's here in New York as well.
That's right. That's right. Anything else, Paul?
Real interesting. Program that surfaced with having to do with the prison system and ex-convicts who are started a program where they're picking up prisoners as they are released from jail and helping them to adjust to what is inevitably a changed world for them. And they take them for a day before they deliver them to their new homes and really help them to try and acclimate back into their life. And, it's just one of those other kind of socially,
I think that's incredible.
Responsible things that, we talk a lot about helping immigrants acclimate to our country, but here's another way of people who had some hard times and are being helped by people who've been through the same experience. And so a really nice kind of thing to see that's happening in our in the jail and prison system in the country.
Well, it's interesting because there is talk about some federal legislation that will deal with certain types of nonviolent crimes. And it's so difficult because, there are some crimes that are incredibly violent and people are really dangerous and, whatever you kind of try to do or say, they really, for some people, they really are a menace to others in society. And then there are other people who kind of did something wrong. They broke the law, but they're not violent, they're whatever. And then maybe it was a very, very minor infraction, maybe just a little bit more sometimes than a speeding ticket, and they wind up in jail for an incredible, relatively long amount of time. And then when they come out, it's such a difficult situation. A lot of people wind up staying in jail even before they have their day in court because they can't make bail. And it's like, we gotta figure out our criminal justice system. But I was a little happy to hear that there was even some hope that there might be some legislation in Washington that might deal with some of that. And so let's see what happens when it comes to those types of things. Hey, Victoria, I want to tell you, what song, non-spiritual song, in that you think, or pop song or rock song, that you think has really good spiritual values? And you tell me that, and then I'm going to tell you why.
Any song. It's a song by Kurt Franklin called Give Me That.
Okay. Is it contemporary?
It's gospel.
Gospel. No, it can't be gospel.
Oh, okay.
It's got to be a non-gospel.
Oh, goodness. You know, that you put me on the spot there.
But you're sharp. So that's why I don't got to give you a lot of warning, because you're pretty sharp.
I listen to a million songs a day.
Right.
Goodness.
You also exaggerate, but that's okay.
Yeah. I listen to a lot of music.
What do you listen to? You listen to like a nanosecond of a song so you can listen to a million a day?
I mean, not literally a million. But
a little exaggerating.
But I at least listen to, I would say, at least 1,000 songs a day.
You know why I'm going to pursue this? Here's why I'm pursuing it. Because there was a news article this week in which a little bit of a dispute over the selling of a convent out in California. And one of the people who was interested in buying the convent was Katy Perry.
Okay.
And
I love her music.
Well, so do I. But these nuns, in kind of having a suit, there's a little bit of dispute with the archdiocese about who could sell it, et cetera, et cetera. But in part of what they said is you know, it would dishonor their vows to sell the property to Katy Perry. And I'm saying, wow, I don't see that. I mean, have you listened to Katy Perry's By the Grace of God?
That was her latest album.
Yeah.
Is that the one with Roar on it?
It may well be.
That was an incredible album.
But she did The Grace of God, I believe, at the Grammys this past year.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And it's the story of how she coped after she was divorced by Russell Brand.
Mm-hmm.
And how she was really very, very depressed, and she was even on the verge of maybe even taking her own life, suicide. And by her grace in God, by her turning to God, by her help, she credits her sisters being very supportive, she was able to move forward in her life. And it's an incredibly moving song. And, you know, I wrote after the Grammys, because I thought there was a number of moving songs that were there. Sometimes in those songs, I think there's more spirituality than sometimes we even find when we go to church, because they touch people in a way that sometimes other things don't. So,
indeed.
So what I want you to do is, because I want to put together my top 10 list of Ooh. Pop songs that I think have a deep spiritual value. So one of them is, I gave you a hint, one of them has been Katy Perry, By the Grace of God.
Okay.
That's one of them. And I'm gonna come, so, but you can contribute if you come up with songs that are there. And I think my rule is, I might change this rule, is I'm not going to use more than one song from any one artist. Is that okay?
Not any one song from one artist.
Because in other words, I could also do another one by Katy Perry. Mm-hmm. But I think I want to see if I can't find 10 different artists in addition to 10 different songs. What do you think?
Do you listen to that much music?
No, I don't. But I listen to it when I go to the gym.
Okay, yes.
And I listen to it when I'm in my car.
Okay.
So I listen to, you know, enough of it.
Enough music, right.
But not super.
Well, see, I work in the atmosphere of music, so I'm around music all day. I should be able to come up with 10.
You should be able to
come up. This is for you also, Paul.
I can give it some thought, absolutely.
Okay, yes.
Now, you know, I'm going to come up with the one. I'm going to come, you know, two people I'm going to come up with songs from, right?
Who?
Come on, you should know by now who one of the people I'm going to come up with. I'm going to pick a song by Beyonce.
Oh.
I was going to chime in, but I was going to let you see if you could get it.
Oh, my goodness. I did not think about that.
Yeah, and I'm going to come up with a song by Pink.
I wouldn't have guessed Pink. But I did forget about Beyonce. You're a Beyonce fan.
Yep.
So right there, you already have three songs by three artists. You can pick a Beyonce song.
I'm going to wait till next week. I'm not telling you which songs by them.
Right, of course. But okay. I mean, that's, we know for a fact at least one song per per artist.
Right, one song per artist. So I got to come up with a few more, a few more, okay? And you guys got to help me, okay?
Okay, well, let me know. I'm here to help.
All right, so let's take a break. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love, our weekly conversation about the church and the world. And we say just love, just do it. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. Join us when we come back on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Was 27 surviving my return to Saturn? A long vacation didn't sound so bad. Was full of secrets locked up tight.
Welcome back to Just Love. This is our weekly conversation about the church and the world. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. This week, we're speaking about a topic which, you know, maybe some people might say, really, how's this got to do with the church being in the world? Well, we're dealing with the issue of debt. And the issue of debt, which we kind of do know personally, when we have credit cards, we have mortgages, we have student loans, we have other types of loans, we know how that can affect how we live. And we also know that there's the international debt, because we've been talking about the Greek debt crisis, which we may not understand, but we know that it's all over the news and the media. And it does have a lot of implication on the way that people can actually live their lives, take care of their families. And so I thought that this week we'd speak with some people who are a lot smarter than me and who understand this stuff, and maybe they can help us to get a better glimpse of what those questions are, how we should be thinking about those things. And so we're going to be speaking now with Professor Jonathan Wright, who is a professor of economics at the University of Richmond. Professor Wright, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on Just Love.
Hi, thank you for having me. Just a slight correction. My last name is White, W-I-G-H.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misread it. I apologize.
No problem.
Okay. Well, Professor White, thank you so much for joining us. And again, I apologize. So how'd you get interested in all this area of debt?
Well, I grew up overseas. I was born in D.C., and then my family moved to Africa. We lived in three different countries there, and then we moved to Brazil. And Brazil had been going, when we got there in 1964, had just suffered a coup, and they were in the middle of terrible financial crises and super hyperinflation. And so living in countries with severe monetary problems has been something I did for a lot of my early youth, and that's kind of gets in your blood, actually. So that's how I got interested. And then I went to graduate school and studied economics and international economics in particular. So that's been a kind of a lifelong set of interests that I've had.
So what's going on with Greece? What's going on with Puerto Rico? What's going on with China? So what's going on there these days? And you got about 45 seconds to give us the answer.
It's a tall order. These are very different countries. So I hope your listeners will keep in mind that you can't jump to conclusions from one country to the other.
Professor White, anybody who listens to this show knows that's the only way I get by jumping to conclusions, because I make my mistakes quickly, then I correct them, and we try to get it right the next time. So anyway,
let me say something that may be of interest to your listeners, which is, the United States is not like Greece. So even though we have a large debt, we will not run into the same kind of financing problem that Greece is running into, because we have our own currency.
Ah.
And we owe our debt in our own currency.
Okay.
And the Greek problem is that they cannot control the euro, and they owe their debt in a currency that they cannot control. So
Professor White, let me put it in my simple terms, and here's where I jump to conclusions, and you're going to correct me. Does that mean, because it's in our own currency, if we run out of it, we can just print more of it?
With certain provisos.
Okay.
Right? Because, I've lived in countries that had hyperinflation where, you know, the inflation rate was 10,000% per year.
No.
And so people will not be willing to hold your currency if you're going to hyperinflate. So,
okay.
The Federal Reserve Bank, which controls the creation of money, it was given that power by Congress. It has a dual mandate. The first mandate is to control inflation and make sure that we don't have hyperinflation. The second mandate is to make sure we try to maintain full employment. So those are somewhat contradictory mandates, and the Fed has to walk a tightrope to try to do both.
Right, and that's why everybody pays attention when it takes them 4 hours to say we're going to raise the rate 25 basis points, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And I usually, at the end of the day, what I figure out is, well, I want to know the answer. It's either going to be 25, 50 basis points up, down, or it's going to stay the same. And it seems it takes them like 4 hours to tell me that.
Yes, a lot is riding on the answer to that. And so for the United States, we cannot run up an infinite budget, obviously, because nobody would be willing to accept our paper dollars or our electronic dollars. But within limits, we have not had any problem financing our debt. And Japan, which has a debt-to-GDP ratio about twice that of the United States and about that of Greece, has no problem financing its debt either. And Japan can obviously issue its debt in its own currency. So that is real.
I never put that all together. So that's a really important factor that was dealing with Greece. Greece couldn't create more euros. It didn't control it because the European Union controlled that, and that's what their debt was in. So that was a really critical piece to their debt crisis.
Exactly. So in the best of all worlds, I'll say something that may be unpopular to say, but in the best of all worlds, Greece probably should not have joined the euro area, because Greek labor productivity is far below the labor productivity of Northern Europe. And because of that change in productivity, it's going to be very hard for Greece to keep up if it's on the same monetary system.
Mm.
Whereas if Greece had its own monetary system, you can adjusts for your own relative lack of labor productivity by lowering the value of your own currency relative to the euro, and that makes your products more affordable. It makes tourists want to go to Greece, and you can, in that sense, keep your economy afloat by adjusting your relative pay to the relative pay of Europe.
Now, that's interesting, and I don't know if any of my our listeners are going to care about this, but I do, so I'm going to ask you. When I hear that, and I know you're not necessarily saying it, but I, you know, my politically incorrect, if that was unpopular what you said, my politically incorrect way of saying is, are you saying that like the Greek laborers are lazier than the industrious other Europeans, or there must be a more sophisticated way that we measure productivity?
No, in fact, I think it would be exactly the opposite of what you said. The Greeks work harder than everybody else in Europe, pretty much. I think figures indicate that the Greeks are harder workers than the Germans, for far, in terms of number of hours worked. But each hour that they work is very unproductive because the Greek economic system and the Greek political system have made it very hard to be productive. So, for example, the Greek economy has a huge number of regulations. They also have a lot of monopolies. They also make it very hard for people to run a business. And it's very tough to be productive in the Greek labor market. A lot of the, and of course, the political system has been historically been very corrupt. And simply using the government as a means to create jobs, whether people are working at those jobs or not. And that's deeply related to the history of Greece and goes back decades. So it certainly is not the case that the Greeks don't work hard. They work very, very hard, but they're working within a system that is broken.
Now, how much, I was waiting for you to say the word technology. That's not one of the major differentiating factors?
I don't know if I would say that that's the major differentiating factor, because you can import technology in circumstances. I mean, there's nothing to prevent Greek businesses from importing fast computers and fast machines.
Right.
But the question is, does it make sense to do that in the Greek economic environment where you have monopolies and where you have such high regulations, and you have very small businesses operating? I think what I've read is that the average Greek business is very small in size. In other words, that means they don't have economies of scale, and sometimes it's harder to adopt the latest technology if you don't have a certain scale of operation to pay for that technology.
Now, could I just take you back a little bit? Because what I was intrigued by, and again, correct me if I'm wrong on this, today isn't Brazil considered to be a fairly robust and a fairly strong economy?
It certainly was around 2010, 2011, 2012, when commodity prices were shooting up because the Chinese, well, to tell you the rest of the story, we had the crisis in 2008.
Right.
And so the Chinese jumped in and had a huge spending program to bolster their economy because they were facing drops in exports. And so the Chinese went on a spending spree, basically, and they were building railroads and cities and all kinds of stuff. And that was bidding up the price of commodities. And Brazil is a big commodity exporter. So countries like Brazil and other countries that are exporting commodities were going really, really well. And then, of course, the Chinese economy has slowed. And as you probably are aware, commodity prices have fallen dramatically in the last 6 months. And so that creates a lot of problems for countries relying on exports. And of course, you know, oil prices are very low.
Now the reason I asked that is because I was intrigued when you said that one of your kind of personal history factors, which kind of got you involved in some of the study, was that you spent time earlier in your life in Brazil when there was a huge amount of debt in Brazil.
Yes. All of Latin America went through a huge debt crisis in the early 1980s. And in fact, most people don't realize it because we think of the financial crisis of 2008 as the huge stumbling block. But In fact, the international financial community was within a few days of being totally bankrupt in 1982 because Latin American countries could not pay the principal and interest that were owed to the major world financial banks. And as a consequence of that, the banks would have to write off those loans, and they didn't have enough capital to do that. So the IMF brokered a deal with the major financial banks to lend more money. And again, it was on the same similar kind of conditions that is being offered to Greece, which is we're going to give you the money only if you agree to structural reforms. And those structural reforms are very, very painful. And in Latin America, it led to what's called the lost decade. So if you look at what happened to growth in Latin America from 1982 to 1990, it was horrible.
And what happened? I mean, a number of those countries kind of came out of it, and their economies have bounced back. There's been growth, and it's a much better economic situation than it was. Is that not true?
Yes, I think that's absolutely true. Some of the countries have done relatively better than others. But one of the things that Latin American countries were forced to do, essentially, was liberalize their economies and become a more open part of the global trading system, which was fought vociferously in Latin America. But that's certainly one of the factors. And it's a tragedy on so many different levels, because the people who end up bearing the brunt of the burden of reform are the poor. And I know that's something that your listeners would be interested in, because the poor were not the ones who took on the big loans. But the poor are the ones who are the first to be laid off. The poor are the ones who are going to bear the brunt of the higher taxes in Greece now. So I think it's a tragedy that the Pope has been talking about, which is sometimes the gains to the global trading system go to the people at the top. But when there's time for restructuring, the people at the bottom certainly bear a disproportionate pain.
So one of the things I like to give to my guests on Just Love, Professor White, is a couple of minutes kind of at the end of the interview, like now, is to make you kind of the czar of the world. So how do you deal with this issue of debt? How do you deal with the restructuring? How do you deal with all of these complex issues in a way that it doesn't disproportionately hurt those who are on the margins, those who are the poorest? So what deal would you cut and design so that it was a little bit fairer?
Well, I think we're heading towards a fairer deal for the Greeks, in the sense that a number of leaders, from the IMF to the European Central Bank to the finance minister of Germany, a number of people have pointed out that the Greek deal is not sustainable. That is, Greece will be back on the table again in 2 years if we just go ahead with business as usual. So I think there's going to have to be a substantial debt reduction. And by the way, that debt reduction is similar to what happened in Germany in the early 1950s. Germany had the opportunity to write off half of its foreign debt, which amounted to about 16 billion Deutschmarks, or in today's money in dollars, that would be about $33 billion. And that's a substantial write-off that Germany got to do. So
isn't that today, in the terms and commas and zeros we do today, isn't that a rounding error today?
Well, I don't know whether, I guess in some circles that would be, but $33 billion was what Germany wrote off in today's money back in 1953. And I think in Greece, they might have to write off more than that. But again, Europe is a lot richer today than there was in 1953, and there are a lot more people. So on a per capita GDP adjusted basis, it would probably be feasible. And I think most of the European leaders, including Angela Merkel, are saying if we can get to the next phase, there will be a debt reduction for Greece. And I don't know what form that would take. It could what they did in the case of Germany, I mentioned earlier, is they simply wrote off half the debt,
right,
which is pretty helpful in a situation like that.
Listen, Professor White, we just have about 15, 30 seconds left, so I want to take that time to say thank you to you. And I do think you are putting on the table the fact that, you know, we dealt with Germany in a way that enabled that economy now to arguably maybe the one of the strongest in the whole world, you know, means that not, writing off debt may not be the worst thing in the whole world. It is one way to try to get things back on track. So, Professor White, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us on Just Love, and I want to wish you the best in the work that you do, the teaching that you do, and trying to help us to understand better some of these complex issues. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
You know, Paul and Victoria, this debt stuff is still very, very complex to me. And, you know, one of the things I think when you realize it is, and I think one of the things when people pay a mortgage, it, I think, is a little bit of a surprise to a lot of people, at least going back years. I haven't looked at it all that much recently. Is for the first few years, you're paying a lot of money, and yes, all you're really paying is interest. The principal doesn't go down at all. So that, you know, by halfway through this thing, if you write off the debt, the bank has gotten its money. It's just they're getting a little bit less interest. So anyway, thanks for being with us on Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And we'll make our world more just and more compassionate. Thanks for being with us. And join us again next week. This is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome to Just Love. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world, and we say just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. We're going to speak today about a very, very complex topic, international debt. But, in fact, international debt does deal with the lives of real people. Can they provide food for their families? Can they pay the rent? And that's critically important. So we're going to be talking about those topics today on Just Love. This is a conversation which helps us to better understand how our moral values fit into the complex issues of today.